So that's basically the plan. And so let's jump straight into it. So the first, today I would like to do Green's functions. Or Green's function if you want. So please feel free to interrupt me anytime you have questions. And also tell me if you cannot read after me, which will happen many times. So let me start with something very, very simple. And that is a one-dimensional boundary value problem. So 1D boundary value problem. So I'll consider a simple second order differential equation, alpha of x, y of x double prime, plus beta of x, y prime, plus gamma of x, y, equal to some function f. And then x will belong to the interval a and b. And I also consider the boundary value problem, so I need to consider the boundary values, and that will be that ya equals to yb equals to 0 for simplicity to start with. So the so this is called boundary value problem. And I'll give you the solution for this. It's very simple. So I'm saying let, so solution, okay, maybe, let's put it like that. So let there exist a miraculous function g, which is a function of two variables, x and xi, such that, okay, let me denote this to be a linear differential operator acting on y, so let me define this to be L of y. And then I require that L on g equals to delta x minus xi. And that g at x equal to a and psi equal to g at x equal to b and psi equals to 0. So let this be true. Let's suppose that I found such a nice function. Then the statement is the solution can be written as an integral a to b g x psi f psi d psi. It's a solution, so solution to boundary value problem. Okay, so here we have the solution. Let's prove that it is indeed the solution. So to prove that, it's very simple. So I just apply differential operator L on that solution and then check whether it satisfies the boundary conditions and whether it satisfies the equation. All right, so let me so prove. Let me apply L on Y. So you are in physics, so you can always, so you have differential equations, so there is some differentiation, and you have integral, but you are in physics, so you can always exchange these. So I can actually pull the derivatives through the integral, always, A and B. And so now the operator L, X on variable X. So it doesn't touch psi at all. So all it does is actually, so it finds where x is, which is only in this function g, not in f, and x only on that function g. So this is, let me write it like that, f of psi, l on g, d psi. Okay, but I know that l on g by definition is delta x minus psi. So this is integral from a to b, f of psi, delta x minus psi d psi. Now, psi
takes these values in between A and B. So you will use now what Dan taught you last week and this week, that this is simply 1. So you integrate, well, this is f of x. So, we are using the property of the delta function here. So indeed, it satisfies the equation. So now what about the boundary value? So let me look at y of a. So again, I interchange anything I can. So I have integral from a to b, g a psi f psi d psi. But g a of psi was defined to be 0. So you have 0, integral of 0 is always 0. So we have 0, this is what you wanted. And similarly for y of b. Right? So that's the proof. Of course, you can fill in some mathematical gaps. And if you want to be more precise, that's fine. But this is sufficient for us. So that's great. It is indeed a solution. So the question is, how to find our miracle function g? Yes?
Just have a question. What if your differential equation is homogeneous? I mean, if your f is 0.
If f is 0?
Yeah.
OK, so I'll return to that. So basically, in general, there is a procedure how to find a special solution for inhomogeneous equations through the Green functions. So there is a general procedure. I will show you elementary recipe how to find g, but where you can use Fourier transform, you can use other things. But to find a special solution for inhomogeneous equation, there is a solution. To find there is no general solution to find general procedure to find a solution of homogeneous equations. Well, in 1D maybe, if you have constant coefficients, that's fine. But if you have more complicated equations, there is no general procedure how to do it. So actually. Yeah, so which will be a drawback of what I will show you now, but anyway. So this is the proof and this is the theorem. So now how to construct. Construct G. Our miracle G. And today I'll show you an elementary recipe, which basically works in simple cases. And then once we have Fourier transform and stuff like that, then we can do more complicated cases. But let's see. So elementary recipe. And that is based on very simple observation. And if you look at the definition of G, then it is actually, it solves the homogeneous equation everywhere except x equal to psi, right? So if I am outside of x equal to psi, then I have homogeneous equation. So basically, I was using now that I know how to solve homogeneous equation, which is the case in simple cases. And then I will construct G from there. OK, when x is not equal to psi, g solves homogeneous equation L on g equals to 0. And this observation allows you to do the following. So the recipe, so let's first, I can find, let's consider x is smaller than psi. Then G solves homogeneous equation, so it must be some combination of homogeneous solutions. So then I write G x of psi equal to A. Now I have solution of the homogeneous equation 1. And you know that if you have second order differential equation, then you have two independent solutions. So then it'll be y2 of x. And then in general, A and B are constants if you want just that, but because you want something which depends on psi, then these can be functions of psi. So A of psi and B of psi. So that's for x smaller than psi. Now second, if x is bigger than psi, And the same is true. I have, again, a linear combination of two independent solutions, but I'm not forced, actually, to use the same base of solutions. So, for example, in the first case, I can choose sines and cosines. And in the second case, I can use exponential plus and exponential minus, ikx or whatever. So I will use, in general, different solutions. So g x of psi equals to another constant, psi of psi, y1 of x, and d of psi, y2 of x. So these are, again, solutions of homogeneous equation, but they may be different. Okay, so that's my answers for g. So third, I want to impose that actually g satisfies all the equations I want. So first, you require that g of a and psi equals to 0. Okay, so what is that? It means that a times I suppress psi y1 of a plus b times y2 of a equals to 0. Okay, so that's one equation which I can solve for either a or b. Right? So solve this for a or b. Doesn't matter. Then I have the other boundary condition, b of psi equals to 0. So the same equation. So I have c y1 of b plus d y2 of b equals to 0. So I eliminate another constant. So let's say, well, solve for, let's say, c. Okay, and then 5.
On 3, are we saying that y1 and y2 vanish at the endpoints?
Yeah.
So
not necessarily at this point. It's an arbitrary solution. It's an arbitrary solution of my homogeneous equation. Okay. Not necessarily. Yeah. Then I claim that g is continuous at psi. So g is continuous at x equal to psi. I'll prove that in a minute. But if that is true, then I have that a times y1 at psi plus b times y2 at psi equals to c y1 at psi plus d y2 at psi, right? So I can eliminate another one. So eliminate one more. So
b,
OK, if you want. Eliminate b. And finally, I claim that g has a finite jump at psi. So 6, I claim that the derivative of g, and now I take the limit at psi plus and psi minus. So I take limit from left and take limit from right and subtract these. And I claim that this equals to 1 over alpha of psi, where alpha is that coefficient standing in the second derivative there. OK, and that eliminates the final one. So we eliminate a, c, b, d. So we fixed completely the solution. So now we know that g is given by that expression there for x smaller than psi and that expression there for x bigger than psi. And we know what A, B, and C, and D are. Yes?
Why do we set the difference in the derivatives as 1 over alpha of psi?
I will show you in a minute. Okay. This is just the recipe. I will prove it. So anyway, so we fixed everything here. And the statement is, this is the back blackboard. Okay, anyway. So the statement is, then, all constants constants fixed. And if you want, you can write down the general solution. So y of x is given by that g actinium f, as given by that formula there.
So it says integral from a to b, g, x psi, f psi, d psi.
But now you can actually write it more explicitly. You can write it in terms of a, b, c, and d. So this will be given by y1 of x, and then integral from x to b, a psi, f psi, d psi. And then similarly for the other things. So y2 of x, x to b, b psi, f psi, d psi, and then the other two terms if you want. So how to think about this? You're integrating over psi. So basically x is fixed here. So that's why you go for this first solution from x to b. Think about it that this is all correct. So fix x and integrate over psi. And this is precisely given by that expression.
No.
Exactly. So that's the problem. So let's look at the first case. So we have x smaller than psi, but you are integrating over psi.
Right.
So let's fix x, right? And then integrate over psi. So here I am for psi bigger than x, so integrating from x to b. I'm always puzzled by that as well. But it's true. So okay, let me write the other. So it's plus
y1 of x. And now it will be from a to x, c of psi, f psi, d psi.
And then y2 of x, integral from d psi a to x, d psi, f psi, d psi. Okay, so that's the solution.
One thing, is there any particular reason why we choose a second order differential equation?
This is just for illustration. I will choose something else. But of course, in physics, second order differential equations are those which are important.
Right.
Yeah. People tried higher order equations, but they have many problems.
But I guess this procedure up to some changes in the recipe is valid for any order.
I agree, but in physics you don't care. Right? So
I don't understand why you use those limits in particular.
Well, yeah, in general you're integrating from A to B, right?
Yeah.
But you know that the first solution, which is, let's say this one, is valid only for x smaller than psi.
Yes.
So you know, but you're integrating over psi. So if you're integrating over psi, you have to treat x as a fixed thing. So you know, integrating from A to B, but psi must be bigger than x. So
okay.
You can start at x. Well, you have to start at x.
Okay.
Yes?
I was probably missed this. What's the difference between small y's and big y's?
Okay, so they are both solutions, independent solutions of homogeneous equation, but they are not necessarily the same. So as I was saying, I can either choose, for example, the basis to be sines and cosines, or I can use the basis exponentials, ikx minus ikx, and so on. So they are both basically two independent solutions of the homogeneous equation, but I can choose them arbitrarily. They don't have to satisfy any boundary conditions, nothing.
One last question. You choose the homogeneous boundary conditions, right? Y of a and y of b to be zero. But if they're not zero.
Okay, I'll mention that in a minute. I'll mention that in a minute. So let me just remark. It's almost a proof, but again, we are not very bothered by precise proofs. So I said that g must be continuous at, for first, g is continuous. At x equals psi. So this is what I said. So let me prove that. So if it's not true, if this continues, okay. So what does it mean is that g has a finite jump at x equals psi. So g prime, you know from Dan's lectures that g prime, if you are differentiating a finite jump, you have to get some multiple of delta function. So g prime must be proportional to delta function. And g double prime must be proportional to delta prime. So I'm differentiating the delta function, something very, very ugly, right? So I have that. But look at the equation which I define g. So you have two derivatives acting on g on the left-hand side, which we know must be proportional to delta prime. But on the right-hand side, you have only delta. We don't have delta prime. So this is impossible. So this is not true. As you see from the equation, and we have a contradiction. So that's not possible. So second, there is this jump condition. I'm saying that g prime has discontinuity 1 over alpha. OK. So let's do it. So we have this, again, the defined equation, delta x minus psi. This is our definition of g. And now I integrate it. So I integrate the equation from psi minus to psi plus d psi, dx, d psi, dx, doesn't matter. OK. So if I'm integrating the delta function, I get 1. So 1 equals 2. Now let me write what I have here. So I have alpha of x g double prime plus beta g prime plus gamma times g. OK. So this is infinitesimal interval, right? I'm integrating very, very tiny, well, x goes from very, it's a very, very tiny interval. So now I know that g is continuous. And gamma, well, all the coefficients alpha, beta, gamma are nice and smooth and continuous and everything. So this is something continuous, but integrating over an infinitesimal interval. It must be 0, right? So this gives you 0. So now g prime can have a finite jump. But again, so if you have something integrated over infinitesimal thing, you get 0. So this integral is given only by this. And I can very well approximate it. So now g double prime is proportional to the delta function. That's where the integral actually contributes, right? So this is fine. But now this function alpha is smooth. So I can take it out of the integral. Because it simply picks up the value. Because alpha at psi minus is basically equal to alpha at psi plus. Because they are very infinite and it's close by. So I can write it alpha of psi integral psi minus psi plus and g double prime. And of course, if I integrate g double prime, it gives me g prime. So it's g prime at psi plus and psi minus. And that's your formula for discontinuity. So now we have 1 over alpha. Alpha of psi is still there. And then that's the formula I gave you there. So that's a, yes?
Sorry, are you saying that g double prime is like delta x minus psi? That's why alpha x came out of it from alpha of psi?
Yes. Yeah. Well, you can think about it that really I'm integrating something which is very smooth over an interval which is basically a point, right? And so I just pick up the value of that of the function at that point. So that's another way to.
How did we set bg the integral of bg prime to 0?
This one. Well, I'm saying g is continuous. So g prime is at most discontinuous. But it doesn't have infinite value. It cannot have, it can have finite jump, but not an infinite value.
Okay.
So if you have something which has finite jump, so let's say in left-hand side, it has value 1, and the right-hand side it has value 2. But if you integrate it, it's still over one point, you get 0, right? Just think about the integral, like the surface on the function, and yeah, you must get a 0. OK, so that's the proof. And we are done here. So one more remark. Let's put note. It looks better than no remark. So that goes back to your question, actually. So what we have done, we have basically constructed. So we have constructed a special solution satisfying L special equals to F and Y special A equals to Y special B equals to 0. So now imagine that you could also solve, so take that you could solve the homogeneous equation. So take a solution, another solution, solution of homogeneous equation. So homogeneous equation is the equation which doesn't have right hand side, where F equals to 0. Now with arbitrary boundary conditions, so such that L homogeneous equals to 0, but now I don't require that YA equals to 0 and YB equals to 0, but I can have anything. So this is A and YB homogeneous equals to B. So if I have that.
Do A and B have to be finite?
Well, in principle, they don't have to be, I think. Yeah, they don't have to be, yes.
So you can have an unbounded solution.
I guess so, but then probably everything is more trivial. Yeah. Well, it's usually what causes you problems is finite boundary conditions. So if you have boundary at finite distance, that causes you problems. Usually solving free problem where you can go up to infinity is simpler, as we will see actually in a minute. Okay. So then the statement is I take y equal to y of h plus y special. And then by linearity of the equation, ly equals to f and y of a equals to a, y of b equals to b. So we have now solved more complicated problem. We have solved the boundary value problem, but now with arbitrary boundary conditions. But again, it assumes that I can find a solution of the homogeneous equation, which may not be trivial. But anyway, let's assume that in simple cases, we can do it. OK. So that's first introduction to Green's functions. Questions, comments, yes?
So I'm giving a general differential equation, right, with some boundary conditions. I can always choose the special solution to satisfy homogeneous boundary conditions and then fix the homogeneous solution with the boundary conditions given. I mean, here we began with a problem that it's general with boundary conditions of YA and YB equals to 0.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, when you say that you take a solution with different boundary conditions, this implies that the final solution will have other boundary conditions, right? Which are not.
That's right.
Ones.
Yeah, but see, so I am just using the special solution which we already constructed, which is a solution of where F is non-trivial. Right? So now I'm saying if I can find this, which may be possible to find, maybe,
then
I can solve more complicated problem. I'm just saying this. But you know, there are many, I'm just, you know, using what I have already solved. But, you know, you can start from the very beginning with that more complicated problem and use a different method. That's fine. Other questions? Okay, so that was a baby problem. Let's do a little bit more complicated problem now for Green's functions. So we will switch to real world, which is three-dimensional, right? So that was a boundary value problem. So now two, is this again? No. Poisson equation. if you don't know this name, it's like forced Laplace equation. So what I mean by that is that you have Laplace acting on some scalar function phi equals to minus rho. So, and in, well, for R in some domain omega. And phi equals to phi 0 on the boundary of that domain. So on. So there's this fancy symbol, mathematical symbol for the boundary of omega. So this is the boundary. That's my domain. So I have, I don't know, a region where I want to solve this equation. And then I prescribe that phi on the boundary of that region has some particular value. So both here, rho and phi 0 are functions of R.
What's the thing you have before? What is R?
It's D. It's like a derivative.
No.
R. Sorry. So it's a three-dimensional vector. Is it? Does it look the same?
Yes.
R. Okay. Sorry for that. Well, let's write this one better. Omega. And this problem is called Dirichlet problem. So Dirichlet. Yeah. Or DP. And so you probably know this problem from your electromagnetism courses. So basically, it's an electrostatic problem. I put some charge density on the right-hand side. I'm interested what electrostatic potential I get. And you probably saw this in free space, where actually you know that. So if I put a charge, for example, unit charge, in the origin, then I must get something like Coulomb's law. The solution, the integrated Coulomb's law for the potential phi. That's what you solve. But now I am solving something more complicated. I put it into an arbitrary domain omega, and I require boundary conditions on that omega. So this is a relatively complicated problem. And usually you have to solve it numerically. But there are some dirty tricks how to solve it in special cases analytically. And I will show you them. Those, no.
The delta, is that a differential?
Sorry? This is boundary of omega. And Laplace, I don't know if you've seen this operator, but Laplace is just the Nabla operator square. Maybe some people are more used to Nabla square than Laplace operator. But basically, it's two derivatives acting on your function phi. Okay, so this and the sign I've chosen minus because that precisely corresponds to Maxwell equations and electrostatics and so on. So sign corresponds to electrostatics. In most of the textbooks, I guess. So there are certainly textbooks which use different signs. So anyway, so now this is a very complicated problem, and I'll show you at least in principle how to solve it, but I will need three steps to do it. So let me start with the simplest thing, that I have basically no boundary conditions. I'll be solving without boundary conditions. So how to solve it? So first, I want free space Green's function. So what I mean by free space is that there are no boundary. I go all the way to infinity, and I have boundary conditions at infinity, precisely what you ask. Okay, so I'm solving Laplace acting on, so similar to what I was doing there. So I replaced my function, which I was solving for, by the Green's function. And then I, instead of an arbitrary source, I put just delta function there. So I'll be doing the same thing. So I'm in three dimensions, just to remember G3. You will see in today's tutorial G4. And this is equal to delta R minus R0. Sorry for that R. Okay. So basically what I'm asking is what you already know, the solution. So I put a charge equal to 1, because there's 1 here, at R equal to R0. And then I'm asking what the field it produces. What is the electrostatic potential it produces, right? So everything is spherically symmetric. So I introduce a new variable big R, which will be just the distance from R0 to where I am. So it's R minus R0. And then you know that the electric intensity goes perpendicular to my spheres, whereas the electric potential actually follows the spheres, right? So the electric electrostatic intensity goes in this direction, and phi is these equipotentials like that. Okay, so how I will solve this is basically I'll integrate this equation, and I will use the Stokes theorem or Green's theorem or Gauss theorem, if you want, all this. So for me, there's only one, and that's the Stokes theorem, which is the most general one, which you probably have seen for differential forms, if you had a course on differential forms. And it's very simple. So if I integrate over d of omega some differential form small omega, I get an integral over omega of of derivative of that omega. So that's the Stokes theorem, the most general form of it. And very simple way how to remember it, there's always d on one side. So there's d here on the left-hand side, and there's d here on the right-hand side. That's how you remember. So, you know, there must be equal number of d's on each side, right? So, okay. So that's how you remember that. I don't need that, so I'll put it on. Okay. So now let me apply this. So integrating that defining equation for G. Okay. So I write this Laplace operator as so Laplace. I write it as derivative times another derivative. So it's Laplace square. Derivative times derivative, right? Okay. So I integrate over some domain omega d times g3. And that's over the volume of that boundary. And then I apply this theorem. So this is basically like d of something, so that's the right-hand side of this theorem. And then on the left-hand side, I will have not d, so I'll destroy d. I'll have only one d then, but integrating over d of omega. So this is d of omega, and I destroy one of the derivatives, so I destroy this one. That's nabla g3 times the surface of that domain, right? And this is Gauss theorem or something like that, special case of the Stokes theorem. Okay. So now I claim that the electric intensity is basically what is nabla on G3. Well, if G3 is a potential, derivative of the potential is the electric intensity, right? So E is nabla of G, but of course E changes only in the radial direction. So it has only radial part. So this derivative, it's a three-dimensional derivative, but it has only radial part. Because, and moreover, ds has actually outward normal. So it, again, only radial part contributes here. Okay, so what this is basically t of omega dg3 over dr and ds. So now ds, I'm using spherical coordinates. So it's 4 pi r squared dr. So this is 4 pi r squared okay, 4 pi r squared dg3 over dr. That's it. Because I am on the surface of the sphere, I'm not integrating over the volume of the sphere. And that's the left-hand side. Now I have to integrate the right-hand side. So I'm integrating over delta r minus r zero dv. How much charge is in that domain? Well, that's one. Right? I have unit charge in my sphere. So it's the total charge inside. All right. So now I can solve these equations. I have 4 pi r squared dg over dr equals to 1, which hopefully integrates. So I have dg over dr is 1 over 4 pi r squared. And integrating 1 over r, so it's minus 1 over 4 pi 1 over r. Right? So from here, I have the g3 minus 1 over 4 pi times r. Which, of course, you know, it's basically a Coulomb's law, right? So this is. Very good. And here I have chosen the integration constant. So if you integrate, there's some integration constant as well at infinity. Well, but I'm choosing that at infinity, at r goes to infinity, I have g equal to 0. So I just set this integration constant equal to 0. And it's not there. OK. Questions to this? No questions?
Where did the rho go?
Huh?
Where did the rho, the charge density?
Oh, OK, no. So first, I'm solving just this problem here, where there is no rho. It's just delta function r minus r0.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'll be solving that difficult problem in 3 steps. This is the first step.
Okay,
so here I'll solve something more simple. I've just solved free space, Green's function, no rho, it's just a Green's function, and there are no boundary conditions at all.
Okay.
Right? So, yeah?
So are you sort of alternating between using r as a variable and r as a constant?
R as a variable. What do you mean, a constant? So here, if you're puzzled by this,
I suppose. This is dg over dr at some particular value of r, which is also called r.
Dg.
It's dg3 over dr.
Okay.
At some particular r, which you've named r.
No.
I introduced big r to be small r minus r0, the distance.
Yes.
Yeah.
But here now, r.
It's fixed with respect to the integral because the variable for integration is s. I mean, you
are not integrating over r here.
Okay.
You are integrating over only the surface of the sphere. That's the trick. So you are going from the volume integral to the surface integral. So basically, I fix r. That's right. In this integral, I fix r.
Yes.
And then I calculate. So ds is 4 pi r square.
So this dg over dr is actually dg over dr.
Okay, if you want. Yeah.
How did you argue again that dg3 dgr is spherically symmetric?
Oh, well, I'm just using my experience that I know that I have point charge at the origin. I know, and if you have point charge in the origin, everything is spherically symmetric, right?
No, this was just from physics, basically.
Yeah. Well, I'm doing physics, right? I'm not pretending to do anything fancy.
You can argue that just because you're wrong.
Oh, maybe.
Your boundary conditions are that in infinity.
Yeah, yeah, well, you can.
So you have spherically symmetric space.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. Thanks. So, okay, so that was part A I had to do. Now, part B will sound very nicely and very fancily, and that's Green's identities. So, again, that's only the Stokes theorem, but in a different. So, Green's identities. So I know here I used how to integrate one function. So now I will have two functions. OK. So I'll integrate over omega. Now I have this Nabla operator. And I have function phi and function chi. So two functions, dv. Okay. So on one hand, I can use my Stokes theorem, similar to what I did before. So I will turn this to an integral over d omega, to a surface integral. So this is integral over d of omega phi Nablaum chi times d of s. And maybe you have seen this ugly notation. If you, maybe you haven't. If you have taken statistical physics course, then you have. So this is a derivative of chi. It's a three-dimensional derivative times times the ds, where this has actually it's a vector. Again, it's pointing out to a vector. So basically, what it means is that I am differentiating chi along the normal direction of s. So sometimes people write this as d of chi over d of n, where n is a vector, which is the normal to the surface. And this is just ds, a number. So if you want to write it like that, you may. You don't have to. But basically, it's the same thing. So I just want to remind you this notation. OK. So that's I have used the Stokes theorem. But I can also, you know, just use the Leibniz rule to differentiate what I have on the left-hand side. So. So this must also be equal to an integral over omega. And now I will just apply this nabla on both functions. So you're using, so I have to apply to first and then to second. I have two terms. So first one will be nabla on phi times nabla on chi as the first term, dv. And then you have another term where I apply to the second one. So it's phi times nabla square on chi. Right? dv. And then if I write that again, what I derived there is phi d chi over dn ds. So very, very simple thing, right? And surprise, surprise, this is called first Green's identity. Green's identity. See how simple it is? To be famous guy? It's two-line derivation, right? OK. So encouraged by that, let's proceed and do something even more trivial. So let's use the same formula, but now we switch phi and chi. So we write the same formula as here, but now switching phi and chi everywhere. OK. And so I want to write it down. You can if you want. So this time will be exactly the same. It will be chi nabla square phi. And this will be d phi over dn and chi. And then I subtract. So I have equation 1. Then I have equation 2. And I subtract these. Subtract 1 and 2. OK. So let me first look at this side. So then I have integral over d of omega phi d chi over dn. That's from here. Now I switch them and subtract that. So it's minus chi d phi over dn ds. Right? That's what I have there. And then this equals 2. So now this term is exactly the same no matter if I switch phi and chi. So that term will not be there. But this term will be there and minus similar term when they are switched. So this equals to integral of omega phi. And let me put Laplace back. So instead of nabla square, I'll write up, Laplace. So Laplace on chi minus chi Laplace on phi. TV. Surprise, surprise, this is called second Green's identity. That's simple. As you may expect, we are marching to our third Green's identity, right? Okay. So now, or maybe I'll use this blackboard. So now I will use the second Green's identity, but apply it for my problem. So I'm solving that Dirichlet problem for phi at the beginning. So now I'll apply it to that. So apply this. For now, I choose this arbitrary function big phi to be our function phi in our problem, which we are trying to solve. And the other, and the chi, I will use for G3, which we calculated in the first step. So it's this three-phase Green's function. So I remind you that Laplace on phi is equal to minus rho. And Laplace on G3 is delta function. Right? So if you do that, then you have integral over d of omega phi dg3 over dn minus g3 d phi over dn ds. And it's an integral over omega phi. Now, Laplace on G3, that's a delta function. So delta R minus R0, right? And then G3, that is minus, but there's a minus here, so that cancels and gives you plus. And Laplace on phi is rho, so G3 rho here. dV. Again, I'm using the property of the delta function. So this just picks up the value of phi at R0. So this equals to phi at R0. And then an integral over omega, G3, and rho, and dV. OK. So now look at that beauty. So we can just rearrange this equation. And we have the solution for phi at R0. So phi at R0 is given by the left-hand side minus this thing here, right? So phi at R0 equals to, no, it's minus integral omega G3 at rho dV. And then the left-hand side for plus d of omega phi dG3 over dN plus minus G3 d phi over the n ds.
N in this situation is R, right?
N is a vector. So
so normal to our surface is the radial vector.
Yeah, no, okay. But in general, you know, this would be true if we were in the free space. But in general, omega is not necessarily spherically symmetric. It can be whatever shape it has. So then this is just the normal to that omega. So we actually step from the spherically symmetric case to more general case, where omega is arbitrary domain.
And function of the position of.
Yeah, it can be function, yeah.
Yeah. Should be phi 0 inside of the integral, right?
There should be
phi 0 of your boundary.
That's right, because we are, is it?
Inside the integral of the over the boundary.
Over the boundary.
No, this kind of I have to find phi knowing phi.
Okay, so this is an integral over phi, but they're on the boundary, so it's phi 0. Yeah, okay. No, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Okay.
I have a question now. I have my boundary value problem with just
one boundary condition. It fixes one part of the integral, but what about the other part?
Exactly. Very good. So I just wanted to ask if somebody sees the so this is a third identity. Third Green's identity. And you actually pointed out the problem which this identity suffers from. So you see that I have a formula for phi in my domain. So R0 is an arbitrary thing in the domain. So I have a formula for phi, right? But in order to calculate it, well, I need rho. That's fine. I am given that. I need phi 0. But I also need a derivative of phi 0. Well, I need a derivative of phi on my boundary. Is that possible to get?
You cannot have both boundary conditions of the same thing. You have to have one or the other.
Exactly. Very good. Very good. Thank you so much. So think about it. So I have one-dimensional boundary value problem. So I'm solving for a function of one variable x, and so in some domain A to B. Okay. So now what you usually prescribe is that the value of f at A is something, and value of f at B is something, right? Or you prescribe the derivative of f at A is something, or the derivative of f at B is something. But you cannot prescribe all these things. You know that if you have a second order differential equation, I cannot prescribe the value here and the derivative here and the value here and the derivative here, right? So if I have, you know, so function, so I prescribe the derivative is 0 here, derivative is 0 there, then the differential equation has unique solution. But of course, this may not be, if I want to describe this one and this may be 0, it may not be so, right? So in general, you cannot prescribe all these boundary conditions. So you can prescribe either that, or that, or some weird combination of that, but not both. You can prescribe only one set of boundary conditions. So this is a very nice formula, but it's useless. Very good. So we have third Green's identity, and it's useless. So let's finally solve our problem. So let me put that impossible to prescribe. So part C. So we tried a lot, but still it's not good. But actually only a tiny bit is missing. All right. So C, and now we will solve our problem, is that we don't use our G3 function, our free space function G3, but rather we use what is called Dirichlet Green's function. And so basically the secret is that to use the fact that we have the domain and we have those boundary conditions which we need to use. So let's find G so that Laplace on G R and R0 equals to 0 except, well, this is a little bit stupid how I write it, but anyway, it's true. So Laplace on G is 0. Basically, it's proportional to delta R minus R. But I'll write it in a more fancy way. Then the thing which we didn't have for our G3 is that G on the boundary is actually 0. That was not true for our G3.
You're saying that the Laplace of G at R at of R and R0, what is that?
Well, G is a function of two variables, R and R0. It was, in one-dimensional case, it was function of X and psi.
Yeah.
But in the end, it turned out to be, you know, a different a function of difference x minus psi. Okay. But in general, it's function of two variables. So it's function of r minus r zero or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. And third, g is almost g three, but not entirely. There is something else. And h is finite as r zero. And harmonic, and satisfies Laplace on h equals to zero on omega. So this, if I can find such miraculous function g, then I claim the problem is solved. And why is it so? So, by the way, 1 and 3. Implies that Laplace on G is delta R minus R, right? But I just wrote it in this way, and you can identify that indeed it is almost G3, but there is something else, something which is harmonic in my domain. So, okay, so 1 plus 3 implies that Laplace on G is delta R minus R zero. For r, well, in omega, on omega. So now I can use again my second Green's identity. And in the same way as I went to the third Green's identity, but now I will use phi equal to phi, but chi equal to g instead of g3. Exactly the same step here. But now chi equals to g3, chi equals to g. So second. The third, but now chi equals to g instead of g3. Okay, so you must arrive in the same thing here, but you now know that g is equal to zero on my boundary, by definition.
That's something you can always do. You can tell your Green function and find another one that cancels out your boundary. I mean, the value at the boundary of the volume.
I think so. Yeah, I think yeah.
Because this does the trick, but I don't know if you can always do that.
I think you can.
Mathematically, it's hard to prove.
I'll show you an explicit example, simple example.
Physically, just put a point inside a conductor. Put a point inside a conductor.
Exactly. Very good. So anyway, so it goes all the way up to here, but G3 is replaced by G, which is now zero. So this term is not there. And we have beautiful formula. So phi at R zero is minus integral over omega G times rho plus integral over D of omega phi dG over dN dS. And I'm saying this solves our Dirichlet problem. So solves solution. This is the solution. Okay, so that's very nice. So how we know explicitly G3. But for each problem, for each given omega, for each given boundary problem, we need to construct g by some tricks. And usually the simplest way is to do actually numerically you solve that problem. But we want to do some analytic thing. So precisely what you mentioned, I'll mention the simplest example, how you can do it. And then in the tutorial, you will solve a little bit more involved examples, but not much more involved examples. How to actually find G. So example. Again, physics, and precisely what you said. So imagine that I have a distribution of my charges outside of an infinite wall, which is a conducting plate or whatever. So I have a I have a conductor here. As you may remember, the conductor has constant potential on it. So let's put, for simplicity, phi equals to 0 on that conductor. And that, then I have, to the left of that conductor, I have some distribution of charges. And I want to find the Green's function for this problem. OK, so let's say that I want to solve. Well, in the simplest case, I can solve. I have a charge Q here. And I want to know what the potential of this charge Q is, provided that I have this boundary condition. So boundary condition, I can introduce my coordinates. This will be my coordinate z. This is 0. So I'll be interested in what happens at z bigger than 0. And my boundary, my domain omega, is z bigger than 0. And then it closes up all the way at infinity, where my phi vanishes. So I have a domain to the left of my plane. OK? OK. So just to introduce some notation, so let me say that this is a vector d, which has 0, 0, and d distance components. So and then I want to solve for the potential on the left-hand side. So I want to solve Laplace on phi equals to minus q delta r minus d, where d is my vector I introduced there. And I know my boundary condition, because of that conductor, that phi at z equal to 0 must be 0. That's the problem I want to solve, right? And then I also know that phi goes to 0 as r goes to infinity. Not that. OK. So claim is the solution is phi of r is an integral. So I'm using that formula there, minus g acting on rho. And then the boundary phi is 0 at z equal to 0, and phi is 0 at infinity. So the second term is 0 in that formula. OK? So that's it. So phi at r is minus g times rho. And this is basically my equation for the Green's function, but it's multiplied by q. So this is just q times the Green's function at r, d and r. OK, so how do I find that Green's function? So neat, Dirichlet Green function. Function which satisfies all the properties on the left, right? I need that that Green function in particular at z equal to 0 equals to 0. I need that. And the trick is very simple. So I have Q charge here, and I know that the potentials look like this, look like that, look like that. But you know that if you place another charge on the opposite side of that thing. So if you put a charge here with the opposite sign, then the potential from this charge and the potential from that charge will actually cancel each other at z equals 0. Okay, so that's the trick. So now I replace basically this thing here, and I put another charge, and I'm asking what is the field of the two charges, for example, here. And this precisely corresponds to what I have. So the statement is I write chi to be minus 1 over 4 pi. So that's the free space function r minus r minus d, and then plus 1 over 4 pi is the opposite charge, 1 over r plus d. So I'm superposition of the two charges. OK? So it's minus 1 over 4 pi, if you want, 1 over x squared plus y squared
plus z minus t square, and then minus 1 over x square plus y square plus z plus t square. Okay. And then you know that Laplace on G is equal to delta here in the domain z bigger than that. So you know that if you write it like that, then Laplace on G is equal to delta R minus D for Z bigger than 0, and that G at Z equal to 0 equals to 0. It's just a superposition of these things, right? And this method is actually very nice. It's called method of images. So method of images. So basically, you can think about this problem. Either you have a infinite conductor here, and you have one charge to the left of that, or alternatively, if you are interested only in what happens at z bigger than 0, then you can completely remove your conductor, and the physics will be the same if you replace it by this minus q charge to the right. But I'm not solving my equation here. I'm always in the domain z bigger than 0. Only then it is the same problem. OK, so this is very nice in electrostatics. So replacing something more complicated with the charges and so on. Last thing I want to mention in 3 minutes is that you can do the opposite. You can actually replace something what is inside the domain you are not interested in by some boundary conditions. And that's actually very useful. And maybe you will learn a little bit more. But I just want to tell you the name in black hole physics. So remark. Maybe I'll write it there. So black hole physics, you know, there is something like black hole. That black hole has horizon and so on. And you know that beneath the horizon, sometimes some very bad things happen. So there is a singularity and so on. But it's very problematic what is inside a black hole. And that's why people don't usually consider what's happening inside a black hole. So we are interested in the accretion of plasma in the vicinity of the black hole. We are interested in the electromagnetic properties outside of that black hole. How the jets are being formed in galaxies and so on. But for that, actually, you would need to consider what's happening inside a black hole. So the trick is that instead of that, I'll surround my black hole by a membrane. So be a membrane. Okay. And then I'm interested in what's happening outside. So I'll prescribe to that membrane some boundary conditions. So I'll prescribe some boundary conditions on the membrane. So physical conditions, boundary conditions. So for example, you prescribe what is the viscosity. So of course, on that horizon of the black hole, there is nothing there. But you just say, OK, I'll just place the boundary conditions so that I can forget about what's happening inside. So not interested here. Interested what happens here. So I provide boundary conditions. So I provide the properties of the membrane, such as viscosity,
Conductivity, anybody knows what is conductivity of black hole? So we are in dimensionless units, so it must be something like pi. It's 1 over 4 pi. So, and so on, charge density. Density. So once I prescribe this, I can copy this, you know, forget about what's happening inside the black hole, and I have my boundary conditions. I'll be solving my equations outside of that black hole. Okay, so so forget about what's happening inside and can solve physics outside of the black hole. So it's basically a mathematical trick. There is no such thing as you know, charge on the horizon of black hole. But I can do it in the exactly opposite way as we are doing for electrostatics. So can solve physics outside of black hole. And if you are interested, this is very beautiful theory. So it's called membrane paradigm. Membrane paradigm. And it goes back to 1986, and there's a book about it in the library, and it's Thorn, Price, and McDonald's. Okay, so let me finish here. Questions?
Any particular reason why you just mentioned the Dirichlet problem and not the
other? Okay, you can do Dirichlet problem. So that's a very good question.
Do we still have that identity there? Okay, so you may be solving Neumann problem, for example, where you don't prescribe how phi looks on the boundary, but you prescribe how d phi looks on the boundary. So in that case, the same formula would be valid, right? But you would need a Neumann-Green's function, which would actually, for example, in the simplest case, you would have that dg over dn vanishes on the boundary, so that it kills that term. So if you want to prescribe that, you need to kill this term. One simple thing is prescribe that your Neumann-Green's function would be that. And think about the electrostatic analog about that. I think it should be something like perfect isolator, maybe? Think about it.
But if you make that vanish to zero, isn't there problems when you integrate your Green function? For example, what we did at first, what it's up there. You take g to be your Neumann-Green's function, and eventually it will be the integral of the normal derivative, right, of the Neumann-Green function.
OK, yeah.
So if you integrate it, you have zero on one side. If you
no, no, but you have
and one at the other side, right?
So okay, so I want to kill this term now, right? So I'll have that term here. So I'll have g d phi over dn. This is some my boundary data, and g is something, right? I just prescribe that dg over dn is zero. That's a Neumann Green function, and then this is something. I cannot prescribe both again. So yeah, so it's the same formula, but the other part applies. Yeah. And I think it should be an analog of isolator. So this we had a perfect conductor here. So I think you do the same method of images perhaps, but this if you are solving in the isolator, I think. Other questions? Okay, then see you tomorrow.